It is with such gratitude that we welcome back our listeners for our final segment of our four-part series on conversations of living and dying well. In partnership with our local not-for-profit, Bonner General Health, Community Hospice, and Kootenai Health. My name is Lissa DeFreitas, and I will be your host today as we explore some of the tools for the journey of living and dying well. May I extend again my heartfelt gratitude to KRRY Panhandle Community Radio for the invitation to come together in the studio to be in conversation with a panel of care partners as they share and reflect upon how their lives are impacted by long-term illness, what the journey looks like for them, as well the transformative gift of self-care. Reflecting upon our four-part series on living and dying well, I keep coming back to the essential pearl of our journey shared. And what holds to be the truest of gifts for me is the power of open and honest conversations. We have discovered together that these conversations offered a window into our personal journey and experiences. And at greater depth, it has a unique way of bringing us together in heart and mind, as a human family, while we honor and acknowledge the depth and beauty of our similarities in living and dying well. In conversation, we have been open to new personal insights, and it is our hope that our community of listeners will benefit from these gift shares. So here we go. I came across a few statistics from the National Alliance of Caregiving. It really helped me to recognize the growing trend in our American family culture to take on the journey of care for others in need. I learned approximately 43.5 million caregivers have provided unpaid care to an adult or a child in the last 12 months. Approximately 39.8 million caregivers provided care to adults 18 or older with a disability or illness, or that kind of estimates to about 16% of Americans. In a recent 2018 Alzheimer's disease fact and figure study, it was revealed that more than 16 million Americans provided approximately 18.4 billion hours of care for people with Alzheimer's or others' dementia. And 83% of these care providers are family members, friends, or unpaid caregivers. I want to add that for me, these are absolutely behind-the-scene heroes in the growing statistics of long-term and life-limiting illness such as Alzheimer's, cancer, and other dementias. It is our hope today to join in conversation with those care partners and explore their strengths, hopes, and challenges. Please assist me today in a heart-filled welcome to our panel members, Pamela Mimek, Norma Reed, Father Nolan Redman. Welcome. I would like to address this first question to everyone today. As you explore your journey of care partnering, what are some key insights or takeaways from your experience?
Well, I'd like to offer that one of the most important things that I discovered in my 13 years of being a caregiver and a care partner was the importance of a community that surrounded me as I did my care partnering with my wife and allowed me to have a community that understood what I was going through and were going through it with me.
That's beautiful, Nolan. That sense of community, we kind of talked about it throughout this podcast about how important it was to build community and that we, in fact, together today are creating a sense of community and reaching out and having these conversations.
Yeah, community is such an important part of this. And too often we think of caregivers and care partners as being in isolation and being alone, and in many cases that really is true. But the gift of care partnering is sharing, and sharing not only with the partner you're sharing that experience with, but others in the community. And I think that as we work in community, it broadens the experience, so others who are eventually going to face something like this will develop some understanding and skills for themselves.
That is so important. I'd like to start with the diagnosis itself, because when we were diagnosed, Dan, my husband, has dementia, Alzheimer's, and at that time the term was used as caregiver, and we discussed that we are partnering in this. We are diagnosed together. We're not separate in this. We're going on this journey together. We asked the doctor for any referrals, and we didn't get any referrals. So we felt a little bit lost as we were leaving the doctor's office. So we discussed on the way home that we were going to educate ourselves and do as much research as we possibly could. After we did the research, we found that it was necessary for us to have a conversation between the two of us on how we wanted to proceed. And we decided that we were going to tell everyone that that Dan had been diagnosed. And so his birthday was coming up. And so we had a birthday celebration, and all the friends joined us. And he shared with all the friends that he had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. At that time, he shared that he didn't want to be set apart, that he wanted to make sure that people came up and introduced themselves. And that was the beginning of our community. Mm-hmm. We must have had at least 50 people there in the community. And the blessing is that today, 5 years later, people in the community know that he has Alzheimer's. And when he's downtown, everyone downtown greets him, shares who they are, and they are taking care of him. It's such a blessing, and he feels so loved and so cared for as he progresses.
That's one of the things that I really so honor and celebrate in what you're sharing, Pamela, because so often I hear from people that they're afraid to let people know, or it's something they're holding within themselves. They might even be afraid to share it with other family members. And so thinking about what we talked about in earlier times of the podcast, it was like the elephant in the living room. So in some ways, it feels like Alzheimer's has been the elephant in the living room. And it's very difficult, it seems, to be able to really express that and to begin to build the community as you were sharing. That's amazing.
What it is, Elizabeth, is it's accepting the diagnosis. When we have been speaking around the Northwest at Alzheimer's associations, the key that we found is that those people who accepted the diagnosis were in partnership with their caregivers and their care partner. And that is key. And as you say, not to be afraid to share it, because most people are afraid they're going to be treated differently when they do share the diagnosis, when the opposite is true. They're going to be loved more, more in the open.
And I kind of like that sense of the expansion of building community that we talked about earlier, is that as we build that community, then there's a greater sense of being supported all along the way.
I have a question for the two of you that are dealing with Alzheimer's. Is there any element of shame that has inhibited people having conversations?
I don't believe it's shame around Alzheimer's. I believe it's just that people do not talk about any disease. It's all diseases that it just hasn't been an open conversation.
For me, my story is a little different. I realized from the beginning, when my husband was diagnosed with Alzheimer's dementia, that this was going to be his journey. Yes. I could walk beside him, help care for him, and love him, but I could not change the journey. Mm-hmm. He progressed quite rapidly. there was no chance to have a conversation. He did not accept nor understand even having a conversation. So for those, it's a little different. You can't have the conversation. Mm-hmm. You go the best you can.
So that kind of brings up or ties into what you were sharing, Pamela, about the benefits of early diagnosis. Mm-hmm. That from the very beginning, it sounds like what you said is you wanted to build that community. You wanted to be able to begin the conversations that you had together as partners, but then expanded to the community, and that there were some benefits in that early diagnosis kind of thing versus what you're sharing, Norma, that the diagnosis came later on. And so you were like full on in it, mm-hmm. and just doing everything you can to walk with him through right. the journey.
And that is a challenge because we hear it from so many people who have been a care partner that people are in denial around that they do have yeah. any type of dementia or any, and that's really a challenge. Mm-hmm. And there is so much information available on how you can approach this and so much help out there the moment you sense that there is some memory issues.
I love that. And I know that we're going to get into some more information about what people can do and what kind of resources are available once you have the diagnosis or looking for support in walking through the journey. And so we want to make sure that we cover that at the end of our podcast. So thanks for bringing that up, Pamela. Any other insights from your experience as a care partner or key things that came up for you?
Well, for us, it's the life plan, us having a conversation about the plan and has really been key. And then meeting with our family and close friends and discussing our plan with them has been really important. And we did that all in the first year. There is so much that has to be taken care of right away legally that we feel very blessed that we were able to take care of that hadn't even entered our thoughts. Mm-hmm. That's why this podcast is so important. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot to do, no matter if you have a disease or not, that should be addressed.
And some of those things you're talking about are looking at your advanced directives, looking at how that person wants to be cared for, and all those things to help assist in understanding what the plan is as the progression
That's correct.
Continues, right?
Yeah.
One thing that I'll add is that in preparing for today's session, I had an insight that I had never considered before. When my wife was experiencing real difficulties with her cancer, the community that I served as their priest encouraged me to move her up to her beloved place in Spokane area. And we did that. And in reflecting on this last night, I realized that while that was helpful in many ways, we moved away from the community. And so my caution is that if you're tempted to move away from your community, you might want to take into consideration what the cost of that might be in terms of support. Because in my experience, I wound up living in the middle of a forest that my wife just loved, but there was no support system. We'd left that back in San Jose, California. And I hadn't even realized that until I started preparing for today. And it's just a caution. I understand there are really good reasons to move, but the loss of community was significant, and it made it more difficult as a care partner.
What a gift for your reflection on that, and just see the power, because we've been talking about community throughout this podcast and how important that is on so many different levels. So just to have that aha experience is a beautiful gift you're sharing with us, Nolan. Thank you so much.
Well,
go ahead.
This experience over the our discussions has been filled with ahas because of the community together that we make together, like around this table right now.
Yeah.
And aha's come. I would never have thought about what I came up with if I hadn't been led to it by your prompting in your note to us.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that, Nolan. One of the things that I'm hearing from many of you is that in caring for someone, it's like a journey mm-hmm. with many hills and valleys and changes and unexpected things that can come up, and sometimes things we never, ever, ever thought would be in front of us. So my question to all of you and whoever would like to share is, what are some things that have assisted you in navigating through this journey that's very unchanging and ups and downs and all around?
For us, it's been respect for each other has been huge. And because Dan cared for his father who had Alzheimer's, he has great respect for me as his partner and what is necessary to keep me calm. Because as he says, if my wife is calm, if my wife is happy, then he's happy. So we do a lot of laughing, and laughter is really key. And being truthful and honest about what we're experiencing has been really key. It's not an easy process. It's living in the moment, every moment, and being conscious every moment, and being guided in how and what is needed.
Well, I reflect on how important it is to live day by day and accept what happens each day and not be so engaged in projecting forward that we lose sight mm-hmm. that today is the precious day that we have mm-hmm. because we really don't know what's around the bend.
My faith and my family helped. For those out there going through this journey, each day might be the same as yesterday, or all of a sudden they're confused, frustrated, upset, and it might bring difficult behavior. I always tried to remember what he was going through. His world was confused, and in moments of clarity, he was very fearful. I would tell him, "I love you." And he would say, "Don't tell my wife. She won't let you visit anymore." So bless them. You smile and say, "I understand and I love you."
That's so beautifully shared, Norma. And it brings something up for me in terms of in that journey, that person is in whatever that experience they're in. And to be able to meet them where they are is a tremendous gift of love. I've seen that in you, Pamela, and all of your sharing and your presence with Dan. And then the other part is confusion does happen mm-hmm. and with this illness. And so some things that care partners can sometimes go is, this is all about me. You know, they're doing this to me. Some people go there and, you know, feel like I got to fix something. How do you deal with something like that in the place of confusion?
For me, it was a learning process because initially it wasn't about, it was more repeating what I had to repeat and not being frustrated about it and just bringing peace into that moment. And truthfully, it did not happen quickly. It was, you know, you live 60-some years telling your husband that this is what's going to happen, and then changing that whole dynamic of communicating was really interesting, and I had to change. And it was up to me. It wasn't about a burden to me, it's just that I had to learn to communicate differently and to hear differently. And that was huge. fortunately, with the early diagnosis, Dan could assist me. I can't tell you how many times he would see that I was anxious or had some frustration coming up, and he would tell me, there's nothing to stress about, honey. We can go through this. Mm-hmm. And that's been a blessing.
I want to bring in a cherished community member, a care partner. Her name is Denise Williamson, and she had hoped to be with us today, but instead shared a note from her heart, and I just want to share a little bit. In her letter, she said, some of the key tools for her journey are faith and humor, something you just shared and you shared. She added, in caregiving, there's a lot of tears, tiredness, discouragement, frustration, uncertainty, and pain along the way. Yet I think of the many moments when I have laughed with the predicaments of illness and dying, where I can find within myself that inward giggle. So with great reflection, Denise shared, I could not embrace life as a purposeful journey apart from faith, and I could not approach death peacefully without faith and thus hope. So I want to thank you, Denise, for sharing your beautiful jewels from your heart. And I'd like to add another question to our panel today. And I think some of you have perhaps spoke to this briefly, but I have learned from many care partners, there was a sense of great isolation or a sense of burden, a sense of overwhelm in this journey, because sometimes, as we know, the journey can be quite long. How important would you say that communication is in the journey of care partnering? And how would you, or have you, dealt with and navigated through this period of isolation?
So the communication starts with me, and that is the gift that Dan has given me, is I, Pamela, need to ask for help, because he continually asks me for help. Help me remember this. Help me know what we're doing today. And I was realizing a few years ago that I was not verbally asking for help, and which I have done. That's a huge gift that he's given me. And the other thing that we've touched on is our faith, because we are truly guided. When we ask, we do receive. And I receive such assistance in listening and having an open heart and open mind with all those things that Dan is sharing with me.
Well, I find that communication is so important, as we've just now heard. But for me, the communication is something that needs to be kept open at all times. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that I am so grateful to have the idea of being a care partner rather than a caregiver is that caregiving sounds like somebody who's giving and somebody who's receiving, and it's kind of like that's an exclusive position. Mm-hmm. But with care partnering, it means listening and receiving from one another. And that means being open to the communications. And communications take more than just verbal place. It's that openness to try to understand what's going on both parts. Mm-hmm. And then to extend it to the broader community that are confused about how they can help and how they can be involved. And as was just pointed out, asking for help is a good thing to do, because most people I know that love me and love my family and all that want to help. Mm-hmm. They just don't know how.
That's so key, because mm-hmm. what you're sharing is what Dan and I right away made a decision to go to counseling. And which we did together. And what a blessing that was, because the counselor could ask us questions that we hadn't thought about. And it opened up all new lines of communication about this disease and how we were going to walk together through this, and then also how we independently have to walk. So it's threefold here. We walk together, and then we each of us has to have to take care of our own personal journeys.
You had something, Norma.
I guess, Father Nolan, I fell into the trap. I, as the caregiver for my loved one, thought I was the only one that could give him the care, the love, and the nurturing at this point that he needed. My family came in, blessed them, and said, no, we can do this together. You do not have to do this alone. I thank God for that, because they moved into the house with me and helped care for my husband. And I was at peace when I went to the grocery store or I went to church. I knew they would care for him as lovingly as I did.
So that's beautiful that you shared that, Norma, because I feel that there are many people in our community that might be in that place of not knowing how to ask or maybe not knowing how to say yes. But what a beautiful gift that your family stepped in and said, no, we're a family, we're a community. We're here, we're staying, and we're going to walk this journey with you. One of the other things that I heard so beautifully shared was all the different ways of communication, because it's not just verbal. And this ties into what you shared, Pamela, with your presence. When you're at peace, you said Dan's at peace. And I think sometimes along the journey, we forget that just how we show up, you know, and whether we're at peace within ourselves and present in a loving way, how powerfully that's communicated to those that we're providing care for. So thank you for bringing that up.
Well, and part of that too is having your prayer time,
yes.
Allocating it before everyone gets up, whatever works for you, but really dedicating it to yourself to have meditation, prayer, whatever term you want to use, and that kind of support we can't live without. Mm-hmm. Another thing I wanted to bring up is another gift is that we do so much more together, and you look at it from a place of positive because you're partnering together. Everything we do now, I do most of the driving, Dan's participating with me and working out. We're doing so much more together. And it's a really a real blessing.
No, Father Nolan.
One item that I think that we're speaking to, but I want to speak to it with for my own emphasis, is this communication is not only with one another. Most of us have a faith experience, and the way that we communicate with our God, with our spiritual selves, it's important that your care partner has an opportunity to engage in participating in expressing their own faith situation and being allowed to develop that in their own way. I was certainly amazed by the depth of my wife's spirituality at the end of her life. It was just eye-opening. And I just needed to be quiet and listen to what she had to say. And so communication includes spiritual communication within our faith experience. Don't lose that.
That's beautiful. That's that presence. It's that beautiful presence of listening. Kind of feeling like some of the things that you shared, Pamela, was leading into this importance of taking care of ourselves and honoring ourselves in the journey and looking at ways that we can do that. As I was reviewing some of the statistics from the Alzheimer's Association, it was showing that 38% of Alzheimer's care partners were in very high physical stress, very high emotional stress. That sometimes that burden and that stress and that ongoing grief that's connected with everyday losses, everyday changes, all those things can have an incremental effect on a person. And so they were even saying that perhaps 70% of caregivers over 70 care partners might even die before the person they're caring from as a result of this burden of stress. And so when you were talking about the self-care and how important it is, I think we're just scratching the surface. I would love to hear from all of you what that looks like. What is self-care to you, and what kinds of ways? I heard the faith and the support and community and prayerfulness and meditation. What are some other things that you have found really, really assisted each of you in finding peace and balance and support through the journey?
Well, I found that, yes, we have a family plan, and it was really important for me to have a personal plan, mm-hmm. and for me to be able to discuss that with Dan, and for him to have a personal plan. So he has a personal plan that is just marvelous. He is very much at peace around that. For me, I had to look at what I can and should continue doing. And that would be dedicated time each day, like we just mentioned, exercise at least 3 times a week. And he never wanted to go exercise with me, and now he's going with me. What a blessing is that. Daycare, when the time comes, we talked about this yesterday. He is very open to going to daycare, which is at the senior center, so that I can have 2 or 3 days a week to myself. And again, this goes back to the early diagnosis. I know it's really challenging for people who are in denial, but that is available, and there are scholarships available.
And what you're talking about is the Daybreak Center. That's a part of the Alzheimer's Association.
Yes.
And that is at the Senior Center.
The Senior Center. Mm-hmm.
Any other beautiful gifts of self-care and nurturing?
I think when you're in the middle of this Alzheimer's dementia with a loved one, you don't think about self-care. Sometimes it's a day-to-day survival, and it really takes a lot of thought and bringing this up, talking about it as we are now, to realize you're important too. And there's so many things that this stress level you're under can trigger. Be intentional in your love for yourself as well. Do what you can to give yourself some time, some breaks, some stimulation, and some love. And you will be surprised. Your caregiving will reflect that.
I reflect on so much of my caregiving when my wife was really in the throes of chemotherapy and radiation, and our lives seemed to revolve around going to hospitals and surgeries and treatments, and it was just almost kind of like my head was spinning with all of the various places we needed to be and all the treatments and keeping track of things, and I lost sight of my own energy level and needs, and it took friends to say, "Nolan, can I do something to help?" Because there are times when you're in the midst of this that you don't even have the thought of slowing down. You need to do these things. And the great gift for me was people coming up and saying, "How can I help?"
That reminds me of rolling back a few sessions ago when Dr. Pelly was with us, and she said, one of the things that I encourage people to do is say yes. Say yes to that help when people are asking, and that can be such a beautiful gift. But also what you're sharing, Father Nolan, reminds me of a personal journey that I had in providing care at the end of a beloved's life with cancer. Here I am. I'm hospice trained. I knew all the things about what I'm supposed to do. I know that there's respite. I know there's all these things available. But I allowed myself to feel like I was the only one that could do this job. And then I heard, well, you are the one that I want to do this job. And so there was a sense of discomfort with any other people other than me being there. And so I ended up going places that I never thought I would ever go, and truly had a caregiver burnout experience after the death. I kind of just fell apart because I didn't realize what I had put myself through in those 2 years of walking with it without doing the self-love that you're talking about, Norma, without really checking in with my body, checking in with myself and saying, what can I do for me so that I can do this in a gentler way? So that is beautiful in terms of sharing that. Important to remember that self-love, important, as you shared, Pamela, to have a plan.
And it's important because you have been such a gift to us, because what you just shared, you shared with Dan and I when we came to pick you up.
Yeah.
You were in burnout.
Yeah.
And you accepted our help.
Yeah.
And not only that, you were able to tell us your story. So when it came to be our time, mm-hmm. here we go communicating again.
Yeah.
I had already heard this, that I need to have a personal plan so I don't experience burnout. Mm-hmm. So I thank you.
Oh, thank you, Pamela. And how important it is that we get to share our personal experiences about this journey, because I feel each of us, all of us, are having our unique journey or have had our unique journey. There are people in our community right now listening to this podcast that are most likely in this journey. But to know that we're in it, not alone, that it's possible to expand that realm of community. It's possible to walk through this journey with a gentleness and with a peace. Will there be stresses? Absolutely. That's the nature of this illness, no matter what it is, that there are lots of valleys and dips and mountains and things we never thought possible. But with a community that's supporting us, with all the faith, with all that knowing within us, to know that we'll have everything we need to walk through it, which is a beautiful gift. One of the things that we talked about in the very beginning, or we touched upon, were some of the resources. And I kind of want to roll back to you, Pamela, on this one, because I heard you say in the very beginning that when Dan was first diagnosed, that you basically, the doctor discharged you and said, this is it, this is what's going on, but didn't provide any information or resources, but you went through a very arduous process of research. So I'm wondering, what kinds of things would be helpful for our community to know if there's a diagnosis, or if they're in need, or they're a care partner? What are some resources that we have right here in our local community that maybe we could share with our community that would be helpful?
Well, the number one thing is that there's so many resources. There's more resources than we could ever begin to think about. And for every type of disease and assistance that we could possibly want. For Dan and I with Alzheimer's, we found the Alzheimer's Association. If you go to their website, there is so much resources there. Another one that we contacted was Agency for Aging. They have so many scholarships available to assist you, and so much information for all diseases. And it was a huge resource. There are support groups locally that assist in all kinds of diseases. We have an Alzheimer's support group here in our community as well.
And a Parkinson's group?
Oh, there's Parkinson's, there's mm-hmm. cancer, mm-hmm. there's all different kinds of support groups mm-hmm. here that MS, there's mm-hmm. an MS group, there's autism, because, you know, we forget that there are people who are lifetime caregivers to their children. Mm-hmm. And it's important to know that when you step out in your community, that there's others that we don't recognize as caregivers. And they had a child that they were born with, and they're a lifetime caregiver. Mm-hmm. So we developed a friend support group of friends who had have Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. and we get together and support each other with the patient and with the care partners, and that has been a huge help for both the patients as well as the partners, that we can sit and communicate. Everyone has something that they've discovered, and it's just such a blessing. I just can't tell you.
Well, one of the things that I love about what you're sharing in those groups is that we have an opportunity to come together with others that are walking through the journey, and they might have some beautiful gems to share with us, but there's also a sense of I'm not alone, that I'm not the only care partner here. I'm not the only one walking with this illness of Alzheimer's. I'm not the only one walking with cancer. I'm surrounded by loving people that are walking through this journey, and I'm not alone. I really feel that that has been instrumental in bringing us together and to building community.
Absolutely.
I'd like to address the community of people with shared experiences. And when I reflected on the fact when I moved away, we moved away from our support community, one of the biggest losses for my wife was she had many, many friends that were going through cancer as she was. And it was kind of wonderful to be the fly on the wall as these people got together and they laughed and they made remarks. I'm sorry, but you know, they did all sorts of stuff that they couldn't do unless they were with people like, it was just very precious. And so the big loss when we moved is that she lost that. And I look back on that and say, what a loss for her, but also she left those friends that were going through that as well.
Mm-hmm. The gift of being together, finding the humor, finding that interconnectedness, the things that we can share together. And as you were talking about the group, Pamela, of both people with the illness and the care partners, it was a joining. Mm-hmm. It was everybody coming together. Maybe it wasn't anything about the illness, but it was just about living life, which is what we're talking about, is living life on purpose. And that's one of the things that I heard throughout the sharing that each of you shared, the importance of embracing each and every day in a peaceful way, in an open way, and to recognize that, as you shared, Father Nolan, we don't know what's tomorrow or how long we're going to have. So living this moment right here and now, and to bring that value to the moment, to bring the value to the beloveds we're caring for, and to get to say to them, regardless of their level of confusion or wherever they are in the journey, I love you. I'm here and I'm walking with you. And to me, that is like the celebration of living life. And that was one of the things that I've heard throughout this podcast, is the importance of relationships. And this is what I'm hearing each of you share in your own way, is that relationship, that care partner, that partnering, that coming together.
I wanted to just add that there are so many free workshops available. I'm familiar with the Alzheimer's Association, but you're actually taken by the hand and guided through every step. Everything that you need is available out there. And I just want to encourage people to do the research, and you will find the help and the love is so readily available.
The Alzheimer's support group that we have here in Sandpoint meets twice a month at the Senior Center. They're a big help to help you walk through this journey. Call them and go visit, and I think you'll find a lot of help and support from the others that are on this journey too.
Thank you all for sharing that, for the gift of your exploration and your research. In closing, I would like to insert a part of Denise's letter, if that's okay with all of you. And she says this: I was reading a recent article about living and dying well, and felt a kind of heavenly download. And I heard, live in such a way that you lose only your mortality in death. And as I think continually on that challenge, it means investing in people, in relations, in encouragement, in mentorship, in gardens, forests, lasting beauty and sharing hope. She shared, "These are the things that Gary and I hope to do until our dying day." So, we'd like to take this opportunity to connect with Dan Mimek, a local community member who has not only had the experience of providing care for his father, who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's dementia. He has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's dementia approximately 5 years ago. We have him in our studio today, and I just want to welcome you this morning, Dan.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to share. It's something that I have some experience with, both personally as well as being a caregiver. And for me, this is part of what I do on a regular basis, is to try and share the inside of both sides of being a caregiver as well as now a patient.
Yeah, one of the things that you shared with me, and thank you for saying that, is that having that experience of actually providing care for your father many years ago has given you an opportunity to look at what that is like for you. You said his denial about the disease of Alzheimer's when you first experienced that has assisted you in some way of being more embracing, more accepting of what's going on for you right now.
Right. I went through the emotional roller coaster that the disease presents from both sides. Mm-hmm. And it's a unique experience that's really benefited me now. I know what kind of the procedure is and how things operate. And I have a perspective. Whereas a lot of the times, you know, when whether you come to be a caregiver or you become a patient, you're not normally expected to understand a lot of what you're going through. Mm-hmm. And so the benefit of having both sides is a real gift in some ways. Mm-hmm. To understand both the caregiver's perspective as well as the patient's perspective.
Right. And so one of the things I remember you sharing with me was that there was a lot of family, tumultuous family kinds of experience, that you weren't the only care provider at the time, that you were like called in to assist at that time. And you mentioned that your dad was very uncomfortable with kind of opening the door for that. Like seemed like there was something different in terms of the family's perception versus your perception of actually being there with him.
Right.
Once you came on board.
Right. The experience of the disease from an outsider, if you will, point of view, is unless you're with the person 24/7 on a regular basis for an extended period of time, you don't understand the little nuances that somebody that's present for that kind of thing to understand. So if I would speak to one of my brothers, their perspective was they were not living with him, and I would try and explain, because I did live with him, I tried to explain that to them, and without really a context for understanding it, they resisted a lot of the things that I was doing on my father's behalf, I not only had to cope with taking care of my father, but I had to deal with all of the family dynamics.
Mm-hmm. You talked about pushback.
Right, right. There is a certain sense that the disease doesn't present, you know, you don't come to people with the disease obvious, you know, you don't physically don't change a lot. So people that see you on an interim basis rather than a regular basis, they don't see the progression of the disease. Whereas if you're present for it, it's very obvious that those that are suffering from the disease present themselves quite distinctly. But if you're not there, you can miss some of the clues very easily.
Right. And so that experience, thinking about that, putting a focus on what you just shared about the gifts of being able to have the eyes to see what was happening, but maybe not being able to communicate with the family members. How do you see that as helpful to you in your situation now, being diagnosed and being able to work with your care partner, Pamela, and things that you bring from that journey forward here and now for how that assists, how your care partnering journey works together?
Well, it's just given me a perspective that I wouldn't have without that experience. And a lot of, as a patient now, I'm suffering the losses personally that as a caregiver, I was required to make those decisions that was limiting my father. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I can now understand why it's necessary for safety reasons, emotional reasons, and you know, structural reasons why things have to happen in order to keep a patient completely safe and comfortable. A lot of the times you have to limit what a patient might want to do or would do in your absence. They would do it. Whereas as a protector, you know, you not only take care of the person, but you look out for their personal safety. Mm-hmm. When I had to make some hard choices about limiting my father's access to things that were dangerous, you know, driving cars is one of those things that we all take for granted as something that we do on a daily basis. But when you have to take the keys away, then that's a huge step emotionally for a patient to understand. I mean, they're struggling with a disease, and now somebody's telling them they can't do something that they've done all their life and may still be able to get in the car and drive, but the safety issues have to override that, and you have to tell the patient no. And now that I'm being told no, okay, I have at least a context for why people are saying, I don't think you should do that. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that makes a big difference in my resistance. Mm-hmm. My job is to make it easier now for my caregiver to make decisions that limit me. Mm-hmm. If I'm open to the experience, but it's not something that you intrinsically both understand and accept. Mm-hmm. Because these are limitations on your life. And although they're being done on your behalf, you still feel the loss. Mm-hmm. And the best thing I can do for my caregiver is to not resist and to accept that as part of the disease, I have to come to grips with the idea that I'm not the best person to decide how sick I am. Mm-hmm. Because I don't understand what's going on with me nearly as much as the people that are observing me. Yes. Those people that are looking at me and watch me on a regular basis, they understand very clearly what I need, even better than me. Mm-hmm. But that's an acceptance.
I was going to say, that must be a place of great trust you to be able to be open to listening and to hear those perspectives, especially if there's a part of you that wants to push away from that and say, I do not want to be limited. I'm not quite ready.
Right.
So how do you and Pamela work together with your plan in terms of moving through this diagnosis and those kinds of things that might come up?
The communication lines have to be fully open. And when I say fully open, that means a two-way street. I have to know that the person that I'm talking to cares as deeply about me as I do about being cared for, you know, in a loving way. And once there's an understanding that the experience, although emotionally wrenching, is one that comes from the love of a family member or a person that is invested in your safety and your care and your well-being. And once you can accept that, then you become a partner with your caregiver. And it's not so acrimoniously a battle between the two. It's an understanding that you're in it together and that together you can solve problems and come to solutions and understandings that you would normally do if you didn't have some way to put it in context. Because, you know, it doesn't, the disease doesn't come, you know, with a book that says, this is how to be a patient and this is how to be a caregiver. We're all human beings with our flaws and our little idiosyncrasies. And it takes time to come together. But you're both doing the same thing. Your objective is the same thing, which is a quality of life issue.
Yes.
I want the best quality of life I can have, and my caregiver wants the exact same thing.
Yeah, and this is the part where we say it's about living life, and it's about living life as fully as possible. And this is what I observe in you, Dan, each and every day. And I just want to thank you for your beautiful gift of insights and your willingness to share your experience with our community. I want to thank you so much. Thanks for being with us today.
You're very welcome.
And personally, I want to share with each of you in our community and each of you around this table that I have grown through our shared conversations. Each and every conversation activated a great depth of introspection, wonder, comfort, and joy in knowing that we're coming together to share our experiences, strengths, vulnerability, and presence as we tap into the power of living life with conscious celebration and appreciation for the gifts we have within us. To our community, thank you for your generous listening in this four-part series, Conversations on Living and Dying Well. It has been a tremendous honor to team with the KFRY Panhandle Radio in Sandpoint, Idaho, in providing an opportunity to create a dialogue that can be shared with our local community and beyond.
We're bringing back Dr. Nicole Pelly of Kootenai Health to just answer a few questions about our upcoming community conversation on living and dying well that's happening in October. Welcome back, Dr. Pelly.
And I'd like to ask you now, Dr. Pelly, if you could share a little bit about our upcoming community-based conversations on living and dying well.
Sandpoint is a very unique community in which to live, and it's an opportunity. We have an opportunity this year to open this dialogue up in a more community-minded and communal kind of way. We are going to have various events coming through the next months on the topic of conversations on living and dying, and we are going to have those culminate in a week in October where we have really look at living and dying through the framework of art, because Sandpoint is such an arts-focused community. So poetry, music, theater, film, really an opportunity for us all to focus on what does it mean to live and die, and especially what does it mean to live and die in this community of Sandpoint.
Oh. And when will that week be, Dr. Pelly?
We're going to start that week on the 21st of October, and it will go for approximately 6 days.
This week-long event is going to literally invite people to have an experience.
And we chose that week in October actually with great intent, because oftentimes wisdom can be found in the nature that we are surrounded by. And that is a point in October when nature itself begins her dying process.
Yeah.
When the leaves begin to change and fall, when we begin to contemplate winter. And so we wanted to frame the entire week on this conversation and invite really the natural world to come in and be a part of it. I know I certainly, when I see the geese begin to fly south, I begin to contemplate what my next steps are. Mm-hmm. And I hope that nature plays her role in really this week of what I want to think of as celebration of the living and dying process.
May your hearts be open to explore the journey of living and dying well. It is our hope that these podcast conversations have planted seeds of great thought and inner reflection to all our listeners. May you continue the conversations at your kitchen table, in your place of worship, in your living rooms and classrooms, but most especially with openness and love. Thank you, Pamela, Norma, Father Nolan.